I'm an addict. My name's Jenny. Okay, let me just get myself situated here. Before I get started, I'd like to say thank you to the World Service Office and the board and the program committee and all of those that saw fit to ask me to come and share today. I am incredibly humbled and honored by that request. And I'd also like to say thank you to all the WSO staff and the volunteers and everybody who, the local committee and everyone who made it possible for all of us to come here to celebrate, you know, our spirit of unity together. So thank you for that. Is it time? Okay, so what can I tell you? I got the email that I was asked to speak on this topic, and I can't tell you how pleased I was that I have a home group. I didn't have to go rushing to go find one to share. I have a home group. It's in Santa Clarita in Southern California. It's on Thursday night at 7 o'clock. The Courage to Change meeting, and I'd like to personally welcome all of you to come and join us. However, please do not come at the same time. We cannot accommodate all of you at the same time. Our parking lot is not that big. And one of the things that we say at my home group, the secretary reads every week, is that if you don't have a home group or you're looking to upgrade, we'd love to have you become a member of our family. And I just want to let you guys know that there's a number of people from my home group who came here today to support me. And that's what my home group does for me. And you know, I'm not going to spend all my time talking about a home group and what it is and what kind of business should be conducted there or all of that, because that's all my opinion and that's all what works for me. One of the things that I thought of immediately when I read what my topic was home, the word home, and what that means to me and how that's changed. And, you know, I was talking with my friend before the meeting as I was freaking out. Panicking is more like it. In fact, I had a panic attack about what I was going to wear. And then I got dressed, and I look great, and I'm stuck behind this fucking podium. Right? Yeah. So, okay, so let's get serious. You know, my friend said to me that a home, that a house is a structure, and it's where, you know, stuff happens inside. And a home is something completely different. A home is where there is love and where there is safety. And I just need to give you my little law and order disclaimer here. I will probably cry, and I talk with my hands. So if anybody is listening to this on CD, there's a lot you're going to miss. Okay, so I just want to start by letting you guys know who I am. I am the oldest of 9 children, and I thought that was a lot until Steve just finished sharing, and he comes from a family of 15. I'm the oldest, and I come from a really dysfunctional family. And you know, I had one of these families that looked really good on the outside, right? So I was in Girl Scouts, and I went to Catholic school, and we had a nice house, and we had a Volvo, and, you know, everything looked good. And I learned that. I learned that from my mother, that if everything looks good outside, then everything's okay inside. Nobody needs to know what's really going on inside. And I lived in this sort of chaotic and house of constant turmoil. But it looked good. And we all looked good. We all had nice clothes, and we never talked about anything. And, you know, my mom is crazy, and I don't say that like it's funny. Like, my mom is actually is crazy. So I grew up in this house always feeling constant anxiety, you know, walking on eggshells and not knowing, you know, where I was supposed to be and what my place was and if I was good enough. And that's what I thought a home was. And I didn't understand, you know, I think that for some of us, I don't know a lot of people in NA who this is true for, but for some people, a home is a place where you're always welcome to come back to. And it's a place that you go that is safe. And it's a place where when the rest of the world is frightening and uncomfortable, there's this solace that you find at home. And that was not my home. And I was, you know, I went to Catholic school and there were a bunch of other kids. And as far as I knew, they had the home that I didn't have. You know, as far as I knew, nobody was getting beat and berated and all of the things that I had experienced. And I wanted to be in these people's homes all the time. You know, they had pools and they had, you know, they didn't scream at each other. And for all I know, it just looked good on the outside for them, too. So, you know, when I was 14, my mom left. And we experienced the 94 Northridge earthquake. And my mom's sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Minuscule evidence of mental illness became huge. And it's like a switch was flipped and my mom went crazy. And she went on vacation to another country. And for about a year and a half, my mom proceeded to leave. She came and she went. She'd come home for a month. She'd leave for 2 months. I never knew when she was going. She'd have her suitcase packed in the living room, and there were five of us kids at the time. And I'd say, Mommy, are you leaving again? And she'd say, no. And then I'd wake up in the morning and she'd be gone. And this went on for about a year and a half. And my parents were divorced then, so we had a housekeeper who stayed with us. And I started experiencing anxiety for the first time. And my husband says I say when I'm nervous, so please forgive me. So what ended up happening is that my mom decided she was going to leave, right? So she's done. I'm 14. There are five of us kids. She takes the youngest one, and she goes. And she's gone for 3 years. And we moved in with my dad, who already had a life. He had a girlfriend. He had his whole kind of world established. My dad was an every other weekend dad up until this point. And four kids show up on his doorstep, and we're like, we're here. And I didn't really know this at the time. I found out much later that the turmoil and the pain that my mom had caused by leaving didn't just affect us kids, and that my dad really struggled with this whole new life that he was supposed to suit up and show up for. And unfortunately, he did not. Unfortunately, my dad did not come home a lot of the time. And he was not around. And it was me and these kids. And, you know, we had a little sad story. You know, we didn't have food to eat. And I met a lot of boyfriends who were older than me, and they bought us food. And this was our home, right, that we created. And my aunt came to live with us. My aunt, who is an alcoholic, she came to save us. And she moved in with us for 6 months. And I got to tell you, it was the best 6 months of that whole period. She brought all her music, and we'd stand outside in the backyard and go swimming and dancing and singing. And for 6 months, I didn't have to be a mother to these three children. And for 6 months, there was somebody in the house, and I wasn't alone. And I felt safe for the first time. My brother is here today, who's in recovery, and when he heard I was sharing, he came up from Berkeley, who I love very much. And when I was, when my mom was gone, I couldn't sleep, was panicked, right? I'm in this house, I'm responsible for these three children, I'm 14 years old. And I used to wake my brother up in the middle of the night and say, I'm afraid. Will you come and sleep on the floor in my bedroom? And he did. And we were like little warriors together going through this difficult time. And we get to share in recovery together now and be little recovery warriors. And that is a miracle. And, you know, I'll come back to this, but I, because of my upbringing, I struggle when my close people in my life go out of town. I cannot remove the fact that I think they're not coming back. So my husband left. He came early to the convention, and I struggled to sleep when he's gone. My brother came a day early, and we drove up to the convention together. And the night before we came here, I picked him up from the airport, and he said, "Do you want me to sleep on your floor tonight?" That's home to me. So, okay, where was I? Okay, so now I'm this kid, and I've got these kids, and my aunt comes to live with us, and that didn't work out so well. You know, I thought she was, like, super cool, because, like, you know, we'd be drinking together, and she'd flirt with my boyfriend, and, you know, and she let my friends hang out, and we'd smoke pot, and she was, like, my cool auntie. My cool auntie was struggling with her own life. And she didn't come to save us. She came to save herself. And the night before she left our home, I found her downstairs at our dining room table with a gun on the table, crying, saying, "I can't do this anymore." And, you know, this was a lot for me. You know, this was my place that I came to when the rest of the world was insane. And all the while I'm using, and all this stuff's going on, and years go on like this, and I meet this guy. There was a time in my life when a lot of my stories started with, so I met this guy. It's not like that anymore. Thank God. It's exhausting. Okay, so I met this guy, right? He was older than I was. He had a job. He had a car. That was a big deal. And he was going to rescue me from my life, right? I was 17 years old. I had taken care of these kids, and I was beat up. And I met this guy and went to Disneyland together. The day after we met, we went with some people, and one of these people had their kid with them, and we're walking around Disneyland, and I thought to myself, this is a family. This is what I want. This is home. So I moved in with him 2 weeks later. And then I got pregnant 3 months after that. I was 18 years old. I was still in high school. I was struggling to graduate. Because I was a drug addict at the same time. And I moved in with him, and I had this baby, right? And we were going to be a family, and that was going to mean something, right? This was going to be it for me. This was going to save me. Everything that I knew of home was what I saw on television. It wasn't something I had experienced ever. So I'm looking for some kind of imaginary world that I can just insert myself into, without having to do any work to get it. So, which I learned later in recovery that that was what was necessary. So I'm with this man, I'm pregnant, he's using, I stopped using while I was pregnant, and we're insane together, right? It, you know, it's just insane. So he asks me to marry him, and I say no, because he's using. And I think, I don't know that I can take this leap of faith, that I can commit myself to someone, because I'm freaked out, you know. I just want to have this little perfect life, and I can't find it. And so through a lot of chaos and turmoil, we end up getting clean, and I marry him, because I think, well, now that we're clean, everything's going to be different. Everything's going to change. We're clean. Life is going to be good. Because when I got to the rooms, I heard people say, if you get clean, you'll never be uncomfortable again. That is not what I was told, but that is what I heard. And when I got clean, you know, I mean, I got clean. I didn't want to stop using. I got clean because I was terrified. I was going to wake up tomorrow and the next day, and it was going to be exactly the same. And every day I would wake up, and all I did every day was breathe in and out. That was the only successful thing I did. And I had this little boy who I would drop off at daycare, and I would feel like the shittiest person because I couldn't get it together to take care of my kid. This little life who just deserved all the love and all of that, what I thought was home, I wanted to give to this child, and I didn't have it, and I didn't know how to give it. So I married this man. I was loaded. I was afraid to leave my house before I got clean. And he was clean 4 months before I got clean. We drove out to City Hall, which was about an hour away from home, and I was wasted because I could not, I was terrified. And the only thing I remember, and this is the saddest thing about when we got married, was that there was green carpet. That was it. I don't remember anything else. And he and I drove away, and it was going to be different, right? And this is hard for me to share, but it wasn't different. And we were a little NA couple, and everything looked really good on the outside, and we had barbecues at our house on Sunday mornings, and I was terrified when people would leave. And must have been the third time my sponsor came to the police station when I ran there and my husband was arrested for spousal abuse. Then my sponsor looked at me and said, "I can't come here anymore. I can't be here anymore. You have to find a new sponsor or something has to change because I am afraid for you." And I was terrified because this man was everything. He was supposed to be all of that stuff. And nobody can be all of that stuff. And I just had to keep working the steps. And I said to my sponsor, "If I keep working the steps, I'm going to have to leave this relationship." And she said, "Just keep working the steps." So I did. I had 3 years clean and I left my husband. And I'd like to tell you that I did it with a fair amount of grace, but that is not my story. I was a maniac. We couldn't make the break, right? And I'm living somewhere else, but I'm spending the night at his house. And, you know, we couldn't make the break. This went on for a long time, and it was really painful. And it was really painful for my son. And my son was 4 at the time. I had 3 years clean. And I remember I changed sponsors, and my sponsor said to me, "I'm afraid if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to use or you're going to die." And she said to me, "You know, you're really good at figuring out what it is that Jenny wants and what it is that Jenny needs, but maybe you should ask yourself what it is that everybody needs and what's best for everybody in this situation." And that everybody was my son. And in the meantime, my ex-husband was stalking me, right? And I want to tell you how messed up I am and what kind of misinformation I have. My ex-husband is stalking me, and I'm thinking to myself, "God, he loves me. I can't leave this man. I'm never going to find anybody who loves me like this." And the truth was, he did love me, and I did love him. And but we didn't know how to love each other, and we didn't know how to do it then. And who knows what would have happened, you know, if things had been different, but they weren't. And we had to come to a place to figure out how we could both be recovering addicts in NA and stop hurting each other and all the people around us and be parents to our child. And through the gift of recovery, we have sort of figured it out. Sort of. We're still working on it. And he's in the room. And that's a gift, you know, that we've gone through this turmoil together and that we can still come back from a place of love with one another. So that home didn't work out for me. And, you know, I met these women and I had a couple sponsors and they were remarkable women who I needed at that moment, who guided me and loved me. And I have a sponsor today, has been my sponsor for maybe 6 years or so. And, you know, this woman is home to me. This woman, when she goes out of town, and she travels quite a bit, she knows it's uncomfortable for me, and she says to me, "I'm coming back." Every time. "I love you. I'm coming back." That's a big deal for me. It's a big deal for a girl who lived her whole life feeling like I was replaceable, I was leavable, and I just wasn't good enough for anybody to love long term. So it's a big deal for me, okay? And so I started working the steps again. I recommitted to NA, and that's the gift about, you know, coming to Narcotics Anonymous is that, you know, we get a little bit squirrely sometimes, but you can recommit to being a recovering addict and a recovering member of this fellowship at any time, no matter what. You are always welcome back here. This is home. This is home. You know, I don't know where else you find people who are, you know, collectively, you know, the world's most wanted, And we're like, we love you. Come back. You're welcome here. Because it's true. We're welcome here. We've earned our seat here. And someone else has made it possible for us to have one. So I've been of service ever since I got clean because I want to keep my seat here. And that's all a part of, you know, a constant relationship with Narcotics Anonymous, with my higher power, with, you know, all of that. And so, you know, I decided after all of this stuff was going on with my divorce that I needed to figure out what home meant for me. And it was my responsibility to create it. And I just started working the steps, and everything started to change for me. Everything started to change. I feel like my recovery started over at 4 years clean. And I just took a leap of faith, just like I did when I got here. And I've had a home group pretty much since I've been clean. And my home group is a place that, for me, it's a place that I go to every week. I have a commitment there. I vote in the business meeting. People know me. I tell the truth. They, you know, they're the people who show up in San Diego to come and support me. That's my home group. That's my home. Every Thursday night, every week, when I'm having a rough week, I think, I can't wait to go to my meeting on Thursday night because that's where my family is. And I have a wacky family. And the, you know, and I had a lot of sort of misinformation to work through to find this family that I have today. So I recommitted to NA and everything started to change and I got really into service and I met the love of my life in a service commitment. I need you guys to know that after I got divorced, it was really hard for me. You know, I thought about using. I thought about dying. I didn't know that I was going to get through it. And I never wanted to open my heart to another person again. Ever. I was 23 years old. I meet this man from another country. And all my friends are saying, you know, just have a good time. I don't live like that anymore. I don't know about you guys, but I have some spiritual consequences to pay for that shit. So, but I met this man, and my heart opened up before my head told it was okay to do that. And then he fucking left and went back to his country. I have a resentment. He left, and I drove home from LAX, and I thought to myself, why me? Why did I meet this person who loved me and accepted me exactly as I was? Because my whole life, it was like, if I could just shapeshift to be the person that you want me to be, then you'll love me. Then I'll be safe with you. If I could just, my ex-husband used to say to me everywhere we go, please don't make a scene. My husband today, I mean, I'm not like crazy or anything. I'm not like walking into Starbucks, throwing coffee around or anything like that. But I'm an opinionated girl who's passionate about a lot of stuff. And it was one of the things that my husband, when I met him at the time, loved the most about me. And I had this idea that maybe I didn't have to change for someone to love me. Maybe I was okay exactly the way I was. And maybe that was home. Maybe that me being exactly who I am in my process of figuring out how to love better, how to be more honest, how to be more intimate, maybe somebody loved me exactly who I was in that very moment in that process, and I didn't have to pretend to be anybody else. And then he left, and I drove home, and I cried, and I prayed, and I thought to myself, I'm not ready to be in a relationship with anybody. I have so much work left to do. There was so much residual stuff that I was holding on to from my divorce that I had a lot of work to do, and I got to work. And I worked with my sponsor, and I did a lot of writing, and I went to a lot of meetings, and I had a lot of faith. And, you know, I didn't trust people. You know, people leave me. People disappoint me. And so here's this man who lives 5,500 miles away, and I'm just trusting that he's telling me the truth. I'm just trusting that whatever our higher power sees fit to happen with this relationship is going to happen. And every day I pray, whatever I'm supposed to learn from this relationship, please just let me be okay with walking away with that. If this relationship doesn't work, please just let me walk away having had this experience and being so grateful for it. And for 2 years, he lived there and I lived here. He had a daughter. I had a son. I'm afraid to fly. I never went to England. He came here every 6 to 8 weeks for 2 years. And we just figured this out, right? And I couldn't do this anymore. It was too painful. So my husband, my boyfriend at the time, you know, says to me, I can't do this anymore. And I thought, this is it, right? This is it. And if I walk away with the last 2 years, that's good enough. That's okay. I said, I can't either. He says, will you marry me? And my life changed. And he moved here, and oh my God, was that a culture shock. He moved into my studio guest house I was living in, and my sponsor had to give me direction to give this man a drawer in my house. I don't have any room. I have too many clothes. I don't have any space for him. And the truth was, I was afraid to make space for him in my life, not in my closet. I was afraid to make space for him in my heart. And all I know about being a recovering addict who is working her way through this is that everything is about having some faith. That a loving higher power is going to carry me through whatever it is that I'm supposed to be doing here. And as long as I'm honest and as long as I continue to show up, it's going to be okay. Somehow it's going to be okay. And, you know, we struggled. I called my sponsor every day for a year. Or not every day, I'm sorry. Every week for a year. I got to get a divorce. I got to get a divorce. He didn't put the toilet seat down. I got to get a divorce. And my sponsor at the end of a year said to me, because she's a patient woman, it's been a year. It's been every week for a year. It's time for you to stop saying that. It's time for you to give this man a chance. We've been married for 5.5 years. Every day I love this man more. Every day I watch the way he loves my son. I watch the way he loves my son. My son, who is just the most remarkable person and a pain in the ass. But he teaches me about love, and he teaches me about humility and intimacy, and he just brings so much joy and so much laughter into my life. And I am so grateful. There are days that I think, I am just so grateful that this I get to be this kid's mother, right? And how did I get here? How did I go from this person who couldn't get out of bed to feed her kid to PTA mom, you know? And that's because of the women in Narcotics Anonymous who taught me how to be a mother, and the women who taught me how to be a wife and a sponsor and a friend. And so my husband loves my kid, right? And I don't mean like he tolerates him. Oh, I love you. He doesn't. My husband shows up to every parent meeting, to every basketball game. You know, he's the one I call when my kids like punching holes in the walls, and he's there. He's front and center, and he's there all the time. And that's our home, right? Some days it's a little bit crazy, and some days it's like, you know, we had a guest staying with us. It was really stressful in our home for a little while. And a couple of weekends ago, my son's, you know, sitting on the computer. My husband and I are sitting on the couch reading a book. And I look around and I think, I found it. This is the home I've been looking for my whole life. But that's my private home. That's sacred to me and my family. And I'm really careful about who I let in there. I'm really careful. It's the feeling that I have when I walk into a meeting and I look at all of you and I think, I know I'm home. I know this is where I belong. I took I'm almost done here. I took a class. I'm a student. I went back to school. I'm an 18-year-old knocked up woman, you know, drug addict who took a risk and went back to school, and I just started my first week at a university that I was accepted to last week. And where was I going with that? I walked into the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous. Oh, right, okay. So I'm taking this class. It's on childhood. And this woman, my professor, says, "Why do you think people continue to do the same thing, hoping to recreate their childhoods over and over and over?" And we're having a discussion about this, and I'm like, I got this, right? They're going to think I'm a fucking genius. So I raise my hand, and I say, "Because there's a distorted comfort in familiar pain." And I'm like, did you get that, right? Everyone turns around and looks at me like I'm a fucking crazy person. And my professor looks at me and goes, "That's the sickest thing I've ever heard." And I look around and I think, these are not my people. But I have people. And I come back. I continue to come back to the rooms of NA, and it continues to be my home. It continues to be the place that is safe to me. I come here when I'm in the middle of a divorce and my ass is falling off and I don't know what to do and I'm thinking I'm in therapy and my therapist is telling me, if you don't start taking medication, I'm going to have to put you in somewhere, because I mean, every insane moment that I have experienced, the only thing I've done right is come to a meeting and show up and let you guys know what's going on. And every time I have somebody who welcomed me with open arms, and I'm going to share this. At a home group that I was going to for a number of years. And things started to get weird there. Because meetings change, right? What I need changes. I change. And so I've had a few different home groups since I've been clean, because I'm a different person than I was when I got clean. And what I needed, you know, at 2 years clean is different than what I needed at 10 years clean. And so I have this home group, and I was really struggling with my son. My son is a feisty little, you know, he's, you know, and he comes from two addict parents who were really self-destructive for a little while, and he's got some stuff to work through. So I was really struggling with him, and I don't share openly in meetings about my private stuff too much. I went to my home group, and I cried my heart out. I wept in that meeting about feeling like I just didn't know how to be a mother to this child. And I felt like I wasn't good enough, and I just couldn't measure up. And this kid deserves somebody better, and I didn't know that I could do this one more day. And at the end of the meeting, not a single person came up to me afterwards at my home group that I had the cake commitment at, that I had been going to for 5 years. And I thought, it's time for me to move on, right? I've continued to show up here, but what I'm looking for and what I need, I'm not finding it here. And I didn't leave with a resentment, and I didn't go to a business meeting and say, you better fucking listen to me. I didn't do any of that. I thought, this is my recovery. I'm responsible for it. It's time for me to find what I need. And I know it's somewhere. And so I found a new home group. And every week I go there. And every week I sit with my girls, and we have dinner before. And I am so grateful. I got to tell you, I hang out with the most remarkable people in Narcotics Anonymous. And I haven't met everybody, so, you know, don't quote me on that. The people that I know, I mean, I think that the people you hang out with says a lot about you. And the people I hang out with are some of the most remarkable human beings I have ever had the privilege of meeting. And they're my home. I'm safe with them. They're the epitome of love to me. They're the people who show up in the front row and just love me no matter what. And I found what I needed here. So I hope that if you're struggling and you're not really sure where your place is, I hope that you go and find it, because it's out there somewhere. And if you're new, I want to welcome you home to Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you.
Thanks, Jenny. Now I would like to introduce our second speaker, Brandon G. from Fort Worth, Texas.
I'm an addict. My name's Brandon. What she said. How y'all doing this afternoon? I'll step back. I said, how y'all doing this afternoon? It's the World Convention, man. We're in San Diego, California. I'm excited to be here. You know, it's a big deal. I want to share that the spirit of unity is alive in this place. You know, in the It Works How and Why, right before the traditions, one of the things it talks about is that our intent is not to engage in the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law, the spirit of the traditions. You know, and for me, that's like about what I feel. You know, the literature, the basic text says that there's a spirit or an energy that can be felt in our meetings. And I just want to share that I feel that here, man. I feel that all over San Diego this weekend. You know, Thursday, when we got here, I was in the car rental line, and I said something about Kenny Wayne Shepherd, and the dude behind me was like, hey, man, I'm here for the same reason you're here for, you know, and it's just been awesome. I want to say real quick, I want to say thank you to the committee for the invitation to come and share here. I'm so deeply honored and just humbled and overwhelmed by the invitation to be able to come and share my experience at the World Convention. I also want to give a round of applause to anybody and everybody who's been doing service work, who's been on a committee, who's been working merchandise, registration, chair in meetings. And the reason for that is because I've done some service work in Narcotics Anonymous, and I know that it's not always easy to show up in a room with a bunch of other strong personalities just like me and sit there and try to act spiritual, right? So those that laughed have done service work too. You know, the topic of this workshop is home groups planting the seed. And what I thought about, man, I thought about, like, when it says planting the seed, immediately I think about carrying the message, you know. I think about that the seed is the hope shot that I got when I came here. You know, there's a thing that happens, man. Like, I know what happened for me. I was tricked into going to my first meeting, right? My mom is right down here on the front row in the aisle. And yeah, let's clap for her real quick. So we used together, and just like Jenny, you know, we used together in active addiction, and today we recover together in Narcotics Anonymous. And it's like we hear all this stuff about how, you know, addiction is a family affair. I like to share the other side of that coin is that recovery is also a family affair. You know, sometimes I get so wrapped up in, like, looking at the problem and dwelling on how bad it is and being negatively bent about stuff that I forget about recovery is good stuff, man. Like, good miracles happen in this program, you know. She's got 6 months clean longer than I do. My clean date's June 1st of 2005. I've been clean for 6 years and a couple months, you know. And the reason that I share that is because clean time does, in fact, matter in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, it says clean time speaks for itself. I hear a whole bunch of cute shit sometimes. Well, clean time doesn't equal recovery. You know, I don't know about y'all's areas, but in my area, usually the people I hear saying that don't have any fucking clean time. Time stands for this I must earn. I know it's not always easy to stick and stay in Narcotics Anonymous. It's not always easy to grow up in public at a home group. It's not always easy to, like, walk up to the back of your home group. This happened to me a few months ago, and I'm going through a breakup, and I walk up, and I don't realize the fact that, like, my breakup is the front page of the NA Daily News, and people are greeting me at the door saying, hey, I'm sorry to hear what you're going through. And I'm like, I didn't even know you knew what the hell I was going through. Right? And I forget about how, like, you know, gossip travels faster than good news. You know, one of the things about planting the seed, man, is seeds turn into these fruit-bearing trees, right? Like, some seeds turn into vegetables, and some seeds turn into beautiful flowers. Some of them turn into fruit. And I was thinking about in the beginning of our basic text, there's this passage, man, and it says, the full fruit of a labor of love lives in the harvest, and that always comes in its right season. You know, and my experience was that that as a newcomer, I was the labor of love for that group that I came into. That I had a bunch of people that surrounded me and encircled me. Like, they rounded the wagons up, right? And they pulled me together and they put me under their wings, man. And they said, hey, follow us. Come do what we're doing. We're going to coffee after the meeting. Come and hang out with us. You know, let us get to know you and you get to know us, man. And the harvest is what I've been doing since that time. And I'm going to share some of the miracles. But before I do, I just want to share that, like, if you've been here for any time at all, you've got your own miracles too, you know. And my miracles aren't special. They're special to me and they're special to my family. But they're nothing like super remarkable that I was chosen for or anything like that. That's just what this program does, right? So when I went to my first meeting, like I said, I was tricked into going. I really thought I was going back to the dope house, you know. I said, hey, I need a ride. You know, I'm ready to go pick some up. And my mom said, okay, well, let's go. We got in the car and we went to a meeting instead. Right? Now, you can imagine how frustrated I was. And I don't know if any of you have had this experience or not. But as we pulled up in the back parking lot, do you realize how bizarre clean addicts look to using addicts? I mean, our mannerisms, the way that we talk, the way we interact with each other, it just looks strange, right? I remember, like, being all fucked up and pulling up behind this group and going, who are these people? What are we doing here? She said, well, this is an NA meeting, and I'm going inside for a meeting. And, you know, my hard-headed, stubborn personality, I crossed my arms over my chest, right, and said, well, hurry up. I'll be out here in the car. Now, I live in Texas, and this was, like, August. This was like August or September, right? It was hot, hot, hot. And she knew enough not to leave the keys in the car with me because I'd probably take off, right? So there's no AC. And I got my arms, I'm pouting like a child, right, saying, hurry up. About 5 minutes later, I said, well, I guess I may as well go in and check out what it's all about, you know. What I want to share with y'all is that I don't remember anything about that meeting. I had absolutely no desire to stop using at that point in my life. I can't tell you the exact date. There's not a lot of dates for me in active addiction. I can give you an idea. It was sometime in the fall of 2004, you know. I don't remember talking about sponsorship. I don't remember hearing about, like, hey, keep coming back. I don't remember seeing the steps up on the wall. I don't remember key tags. I don't remember anything about any literature, man. The one thing that I remember, guys, is I remember that I felt something in that place for that hour that I hadn't felt in a really long time. And I didn't know what it was. I mean, it was unfamiliar to me because my spirit was so dead by that time. I was nearing the end of my road. And I had just done so much for so long, and I'd been breaking the law and going in and out of people's lives and just leaving this chaos in my wake that I remember being in that meeting and just feeling like, wow, there's something that's really attractive about this. And what I know today is it's that spirit, man. It's that energy that we have in our meetings. You know, home groups, for me, it's like there's a lot of competitions where I come from, and I hear just this stuff, and it makes me sick sometimes. Like, well, my home group's the best home group in the world, and this group's better than that group. And you know what? What I like to say is my home group's the best group for me. I don't know about what you need, man, but I know that where I go to meetings regularly, that is the best meeting for me. It fits my personality. Those are my people there. And it's somewhere that I identify. And it's like a place that when I go, I feel safe and I feel like I belong there, right? I also want to share real quick because in Dallas and Fort Worth, we have a lot of clubhouses, right? So, like, my home group meets 7 days a week at noon and 7 o'clock, you know. And I know there's not a whole lot of areas to do it like that. Most meetings move around, like, one night a week, right? And so one of the things I always tell people, it's like a double-edged sword, man. Because one thing that's real cool is that newcomers don't have to be confused about, well, what meeting is it on what night and where and how do I get there and stuff. Like, they know every day there's a meeting at this spot. The bad side of it is that we end up having a whole lot of people that never move outside of one group. They go to one group because they can make a meeting there every day, and they don't get to see the bigger picture of the area, right? And like in our traditions, one of the things it talks about is that we pick up information as we talk to members and visit various groups. You know, for me, the deal is that as I came in as a complete newcomer, completely void of hope, you know, emotionally bankrupt, spiritually dead, right? Like all those things that we all came in. One of the things that happened for me, man, was that as I began to open my mind, right, because if you bring the mind long enough, if you bring the body long enough, the mind will follow. As I began the process of opening my mind and actually listening a little bit and hearing bits and pieces of what people would say, for a long time it was like I would hear people say, no, 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 drugs. No, 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 the bar. No, 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 sex, right? And that's all I heard. I didn't hear any of the spiritual principles, but I would hear those key words that I honed in on. And as I kept coming back and kept coming back clean, I began to hear things. I want to share real quick, because I'm not confused about what my job is up here. You know, when I accepted this commitment, anything that I do in Narcotics Anonymous should always be motivated by a desire to carry the message. So I want to say that if you're new in here, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. I want to tell you that you never have to use again. I want to let you know that that's if you want to, if you don't want to, or if you don't know yet. You don't have to pick up over anything that happens in your life. See, I hear people say sometimes, well, it's not about getting high today. You know, to each his own, man, and we all come to an understanding of the program for ourselves, but for me, that's a real dangerous statement to make. Because for me, it's always about staying clean first. You know, I don't know about y'all, but I still know how to get high, man. I still know where to get some. Matter of fact, I got more money now than I did when I was using, so I could go get a whole lot today, right? But the deal is, man, is it's not a solution today. It doesn't seem like something that would make my life better or would solve any of my problems. As a matter of fact, I've become convinced of the fact that it would make everything worse, you know? So as I came in and I began the process of working steps and getting a sponsor, I'm a ninth grade dropout. Let y'all know a little bit about me. I'm a ninth grade dropout. By the time I got clean, I had a daughter who was almost a year old who I'd never met. Never laid eyes upon her, never seen her, never called to ask her mom how she was doing, never sent any money to help her mom through the pregnancy process. And guys, I don't stand up here and share that because I'm proud of that. I stand up here and share that with my head held high because I've got some freedom in my life from the fourth and fifth step, and that stuff doesn't hold me captive today. And I know that that's a part of my story and it's a part of my history, but it's not a part of my present, right? Like, that's not the guy that I am today, you know? I remember growing up, man, and I would see these, like, talk shows, you know, these daytime talk shows. And the one I remember, because I would fake being sick so I could stay home from school, y'all too. And I'd watch these things on TV, right? And one of them was Montel Williams. I remember watching Montel Williams, and he would have these women on there, and they'd have these children. And the dads would be on the other side of the stage, and they'd be saying, well, yeah, this is the father right here. And the guy would be saying, no, it's not, no, it's not. So they'd do a DNA test, you know, and at the end of the show, he'd come out, and he'd say, well, yeah, it is. I've got the proof right here. And the dad would say, well, I'm still not going to participate in the child's life. Now, the reason I'm sharing all this, there's a point. I remember at that young age, I was probably 11, 12 years old, something like that. I remember watching that stuff and just being completely baffled. Like, how could they do that? I mean, how could you have a child and just throw it out there that, you know what, I know it's mine, but I'm still not going to do the right thing. I just couldn't wrap my mind around that. And what I want to share, man, is that the disease of addiction turned me into that very thing that I could never understand. It turned me into a deadbeat dad. It turned me into a guy who didn't have the ability to call and express any kind of interest or willingness to be involved or to help out in a child that I had created, right? So that's the state of my affairs when I got clean. I remember my sponsor, my first sponsor. I'm working the first step, and I said, I called him one night, and I said, man, you know, I'm doing this step work, and I just think unmanageability is a little bit too strong of a word. And he said, oh, really? And I think he was waiting for me to say, oh, I'm just kidding, because he went, oh, you're serious? And I was like, yeah, I really do. I think it's too strong. He said, okay, well, let me do this. I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and based on your response to these questions, then we can probably come up with a decision as far as whether your life has been unmanageable or not. I said, okay, that sounds fair. So he said, tell me about your finances. How's that been? I said, well, I'm broke, man. I owe Wells Fargo about $2,000 for this credit card that I maxed out when I was using. He said, okay, what about your employment history? I said, man, I've never held a job for any longer than 5 months. He said, well, I know you told me you have a daughter. How's she doing? How's that going? I said, man, I've never even met her, you know. He said, okay, well, what about your education? I said, I dropped out of high school in the ninth grade, man. He said, all right. Do you want me to keep going, or, I mean, are you convinced? And I was like, wow, yeah, you're right, you know. I got you. Because we're each other's eyes and ears, and I don't see me clearly. You know, that's why sponsorship is so valuable to me. Because I need to have another member of Narcotics Anonymous who loves me and is willing to help me by telling me the stuff that I don't want to hear. You know, I need to get a better perspective on my life. So I'm working steps. I get this job. About 6 months clean, I go to work at a restaurant, right? At about the same time, I decide that I'm going to go back to school. And as I'm doing that, man, one of the things that came up in my mind was like, you can't go to school, man. You're a drug addict. You've washed all that stuff away. It's too late for you, right? And the next thought was like, you better not, don't tell anybody you thought about that. They're going to laugh at you. You're going to look like a fool, right? Because you can't do that. You dropped out in the ninth grade. You're not smart enough. All this stuff is coming into my mind, right? And by that time, I had enough of a foundation, and I had done enough work on the first step that I was getting in touch with surrender, and I knew, you know, I better go ahead and run this by my sponsor anyway, just to see what he thinks. You know, and I called him, and of course, we all know what he said. He said, man, that's a great idea. You're a smart guy. I think you should do that. So fast forward a little bit, and I had also tried to contact my ex about seeing my daughter and meeting my daughter for the first time by this point. I had written her a letter when I was in jail. Then when I got out, I called her. She said no both times. And so I walk into this class feeling so intimidated. Man, I always share that, like, I felt like the dean of the university had sent out an email and said, there's a drug addict going to be on campus today. He's going to be in your class. He's wearing a brown shirt. Watch out for him. That's how out of place I felt, man. I felt like I didn't belong there, you know. But I'm working steps by this point. I'm attending meetings regularly at my home group. I need to give a shout out real quick. My home group is the Broadway group. It's in Haltom City, Texas, in the Fort Worth area. So as you can see, we're all right over here. So I'm plugging into my recovery at this time. And I gained the ability to call my sponsor and say, you know, what do I need to do to be able to meet my daughter? I walk into this classroom. I've been trying to force it, right? Like, I've been trying to convince her and thinking if I can just say the right thing to her, she'll let me meet my daughter. If I can just do the right stuff, if I can just manipulate, if I can put myself in the right place at the right time, or if I can get the right attorney, or just tell her those right words. I don't know if y'all can identify with that, but, like, that's the way I always thought, that when I want something, I just have to work hard enough to manipulate stuff and put it in the right place so I can make it happen. Because, like, I never got in touch with the concept of trusting God for the outcome. Right? Like, what happened in the third step is that I learned that my job is to put effort in, man. I'm in the efforts business, and God is in the outcome business. See, I just got to chop the wood, man, and let the chips fall where they may. So I walk into this classroom feeling all crazy and out of sorts, and guess who's sitting right there? My daughter's mom, right? Yeah, she said it. I live in a big city, man. Like, I don't believe in coincidences today. You know, I believe that a coincidence is when God chooses to remain anonymous, right? And so what happened, man, was, you know, I got in there, and we're catching up, and by the end of the class, I was able to say, hey, can I talk to you outside real quick? We go outside, and I ask her a third time, face-to-face, in person. I said, you know, I really hate the way that things happened. You know, I hate the fact that I haven't met our daughter yet. I'm ready to do what I need to do. I'll pay child support. It can be supervised visitation. I don't care. Just please give me an opportunity to meet her and to be a part of her life. I want to do right by her. And she said, let me think about that. She called me back a week later, and she said, I can't do it. I can't put her at risk like that. Now, I called my sponsor, and I said, man, that beep and beep won't let me see her, right? Try to censor my profanity. He said, oh, really? Is that what she is? I said, yeah, man, she's not giving me a chance. I've been clean for 6 months. Thought that was a long time, man. I wanted everybody to forgive me at that point. And he said, well, here's what I want you to know. You've done everything for her to tell you that. He said, she had every reason to tell you that. I don't blame her. She's seen you do this, Brandon. You go on these streets, and I'm a real good talker. I don't know about y'all. I can talk y'all into doing some stuff just with my words and make stuff happen, right? I've done sales, if that gives you an idea. And he said, why don't we just continue in the step working process, and let's let God sort that all out, right? So I keep working steps, and I remember I got to this point. Now, I'm talking about planting the seed, right? I don't want you to think that I'm off topic, because what this is, like what I mentioned it a minute ago, when I talk about planting the seed, I think about the seed of hope, man. And hope is not only for somebody who's coming in and dragging their ass in and they've been on a long run with drugs. Like, the first step in a Word Town Y says the disease of addiction will manifest itself in a variety of ways that have nothing to do with drugs. And so what happens, man, is that my life is affected in all these different areas because I got the disease of addiction, and I'm prone to act out obsessively. And once I act out obsessively, then compulsion begins, right? And I'm so self-centered at my core that everything I do is always about me. And so what happens is that as I'm sharing with him about all this stuff, and he's helping me to retrain my spirit, because I firmly believe that the step working process is all about spiritual preparation, right? Is that by the end of that semester, she calls me and she says, I need you to make a decision. And I said, okay, what's that? She said, I need you to either sign your rights over to this guy who's been there all along, who's on the birth certificate, who's been doing what you've been supposed to be doing, or we're going to go to a family court and we'll see what a judge thinks about you being a part of her life, right? Now, I wish I could tell you all that instantaneously. I was like, all right, family court, here we come. But I had a lot of fear associated with making that decision to go to family court. I knew that I had never had any good experience with courts. I never did, you know. Every time I went to court, I usually ended up going to jail immediately, right? Judges were never nice to me. I mean, it never worked out well, you know. So I said, can I think about that? And then let me get real honest, right? Honesty is the antidote to our disease thinking. The other part of it, the deeper part of it, was that I was terrified of actually being a father. Like, I knew that it took a whole lot of money. I knew it took a whole lot of time. And on a deeper level, I've got daddy issues, right? And so there was stuff in my mind that's going like, I don't know if I'm qualified to be a father. I don't know if I can be a good daddy. I had an example of a man who did the best that he knew how to do with the tools that he had, but it wasn't like the picture perfect. It wasn't what I thought of when I thought of what a father-son relationship is supposed to look like. It wasn't what I saw from all my friends when they would have their dads show up at campouts and show up at like all this stuff that was going on. And so in my mind, I'm going, I've never been shown how to be a good dad, right? And do I really want to take this little girl who's innocent, who I've inflicted so much harm on, even before she was born, I was doing harm to this child. Do I want to really take her and like put her at risk to have a bad dad in me? So I said, give me a week. Let me think about this for a week. I go to my home group one night. And I asked my buddy, and I'm real grateful that he was in touch with the 12th step. Because one of the things the 12th step says is that we share our own experience, strength, and hope. We don't share theories. We don't share other people's experiences. We share what we've been through. You know, my job as a member, because I've made the membership decision that the third tradition talks about, is that if I have not been through what you're asking me about, I damn well better say, you know what, I don't know, man. I've never been through that. But so-and-so has. Go talk to so-and-so. This is all about like me telling you, you know, what happened, what I did about it, and how it worked out, right? And so I went to my friend, and I asked him, I said, man, she gave me this decision. I've got a week. I can either go to family court or I can sign my rights over. And he said, you know what, man, I've never been through that. But my sponsor has. He's right over there. Why don't you go talk to him? Now, this is a real funny story. In our literature, one of the things it says is that sometimes we're amazed at the simplicity of the answer when we ask an old-timer, right? So I go to this guy who's actually celebrating 25 years this weekend here in San Diego, and I don't see him in here, but I go over to this guy, and I give him this, I don't know, 5 or 10 minute long dissertation on everything that happened and everywhere I went and everything that she said and all this, like, backstory and all this stuff, right? And, like, I stop to take a breath, and he puts his hand on my shoulder, and he said, are you done? And I was like, well, sure, I guess. And he said, buddy, you just do the next right thing, and God will show up. I was like, what? That's it? That's all you got for me? I just gave you 10 minutes of my life. And all you have is just do the next right thing and God will show up. Right? But what happened as soon as he said that was that I knew according to what's right for me, I knew that I was going to family court. You know, now I don't want to spend a whole long time on this story, but this is where my spirit is being led to. Right? So I'm trying to follow my spirit here. And so I go to family court, and I get up before this judge, and this judge talks to me real bad, right? She's like, well, you're nothing but a drug addict, and I already know how this is going to work out because of your track record, and I've seen plenty of drug addicts in here, and you talk a good game, but I know y'all never change. Once an addict, always an addict. It'll no longer be tolerated by society or the addict himself. But see, probably the last to be lost to addiction will be the stigma of being an addict. And so while we know better in this room and in this convention center and in San Diego, California this weekend, everybody else out there doesn't know yet that this works. Everybody else has not become convinced of the spiritual magic that happens in Narcotics Anonymous. And so one of the things that I believe is that it's our duty as members to go and live our lives in a way that's responsible and conducive to acceptable, responsible, and productive members of society. Because you know what? Check this out, man. You might be the only basic text somebody ever sees out there. So, like, what I try to do is I want to let my feet match my mouth. I can share my ass off. I can pick up the lingo and figure out what to say to sound good. But am I being honest? Because our words are meaningless unless we live them. So I stand there with my hands behind my back while this judge is just tearing me up, right? Stand there with my hands behind my back and I say, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, you're right. I did that. I take responsibility. That was me, right? That was not easy, man. But see, what happened is because I'm involved in formal service, or I was at that time involved in formal service at my home group, I had learned the ability to shut my mouth and practice the principle of restraint when I need to, you know? So it was real funny, man. At the end of that hearing, she says, have any of y'all been doing drugs lately? And she started with me, and I said, well, no, ma'am. It's been, at that time, it had been like 9 months or a year or something like that. I said, no, ma'am, I've been clean for so long, whatever. But I have a very colorful history, as you can probably see from your records there, of using drugs. She turned to my ex, and she said, what about you? And she said, nope. And she turned to the other guy, you know, the father who I was going to sign my rights over to, and asked him, and he said, nope. Now, in my mind, I'm going, me and my ex, we used to get high all the time together, right? At the end of that hearing, she says, all right, bailiff, I want a drug screen on all three of these. And it's real funny the way my ex piped up and said, oh, well, actually, Your Honor, I lied. The judge didn't laugh, man. It was awesome, actually. And, you know, like sometimes God will use a jackass to let a smartass know that he knows nothing, right? And so as that's going on, the judge says, oh, really? Right? Like Judge Judy style, right? Oh, really? And I'm like, oh, this is going to be good, right? She said, well, what drugs have you used? And she said, well, I've smoked some weed and I've done some ecstasy. She said, really? Right? She's getting like, her eyes are getting bigger and she's getting louder. She said, when's the last time you did some ecstasy? She said, well, last weekend. And man, I thought the judge was going to hurdle that desk that she sits behind. She said, get her out of my sight. I mean, she just went nuts, right? But like what I'm trying to share, man, is that there's always a spiritual benefit or a spiritual reward that as long as I do the right thing for the right reason, God will come behind and he'll take care of my business. See, as long as I'm taking care of God's business, God will take care of my business. And God's business is do the right thing for the right reason. The definition of integrity is doing the right thing when nobody's looking. When it really counts. Right? So, man, like 6 months into that court process, I'm going to meetings. I'm working steps. I'm living this life. Right? And I still haven't met my daughter. And I go into a meeting one day at noon. I just left court, man. And I went in there and I'm slinging snot and I'm crying and I'm not getting anywhere. It's not worth it. I've been going to these court hearings and taking off work for 6 months and missing class, and it's not going to work, man. I'm done. Like, my spirit was just drained of all this energy that I'd been putting into this situation, right? And so I share this stuff, man, and I vomit on the group, and it's real important. Like, the 12th step, man, check this out. The 12th step says, old-timer, regardless of clean time, may you always have the ability to go into a meeting and share honestly about what's going on in your life. Without fear of judgment. Like, please don't think that you have to come in here and paint this pretty picture when you go to a meeting at your home group because you feel like you have to carry the message and not the mess. Because check this out, man. Another thing it says in the 12th step is that as we go in and we vomit on the group and we do these things and we share and we get free, the message is that as soon as we share that stuff, we say, but I'm not going to use today. Thanks for letting me share. And that's what this is about. Because look, man, a simple, honest message of recovery from addiction rings true. I don't need to hear the pretty picture that you've come up with in your mind. I don't need you to come up in here and pretend to be somewhere that you're not. Matter of fact, man, like, hey, predecessor,
I need you to come in here and tell me what you're going through right now. Because you know what, man? Like, if I end up going through that at some point in my recovery, I need to know who to call and ask how you got through that. Because what I know about Narcotics Anonymous, man, is that life doesn't go away when we get clean. I'm grateful that my predecessors told me, man, you better get ready. They said, I don't know what your what-ifs are going to be, but there's going to be some. I'm convinced today that I must not use no matter what. I got off track there. That's. So after that meeting's over, right, I share that stuff, and I'm in this immense amount of pain. And my friend Dean, right there in the red shirt, and another guy, came up to me after the meeting. And he said, Brandon, this is where you have an opportunity to practice the principle of perseverance, which in my humble opinion is a principle we don't talk about nearly enough in Narcotics Anonymous. They said perseverance is the ability to keep putting one foot in front of the other regardless of the war that's going on around you. Because you know what, man? My grand sponsor from Brooklyn, New York, he always says, you know what, man? There's no victory without warfare. Like, I can't stand up and say that I've conquered something if I didn't fight for it. And I know that, like, in the times that I've been down in the trenches in Narcotics Anonymous, that I haven't been alone. That I've got NA soldiers on both sides of me who get down there and they bleed and they sweat and they cry with me and they hug me and they lift me up and they support me and we walk through it together. And, like, what I want to share is that newcomer, you better get some step work under your belt because your storm is on its way. And that's the message that I got when I went to the home group. That's one of the seeds that was planted in me. So I keep going. I keep walking. I keep showing up to those court hearings, those mediations, those depositions. I keep taking those classes. I keep going and letting that judge talk to me real bad. She never stopped, man. Every time I saw her, she reminded me that all she thought of me was that I was a drug addict and I was never going to change. The day rolled along that I got to meet my daughter. It was a supervised visitation. We had set it up that it was going to be for an hour every month, and it was going to be at her place of residence. I walked in there, and one of the things that I knew by that point is that I didn't want to come into her life and bombard her with, like, hey, I'm your dad. Because I didn't know what she had had to go through to be able to process the fact that, like, she didn't have a nuclear family. I didn't know what she had had to do to, like, compensate for the conditions of her life. And for me to go in there and bombard her with, hey, I'm your dad, and I'm here now, da-da-da, right? Like, that would cause harm. Right? So I walked in and I said, hi, Levi, how you doing? And she turned around and she ran away. And man, my heart dropped. And like my spirit, I just felt like I'd been kicked in the gut by it. No human being could hurt me in the way that that hurt me. Right? But I heard, hey, perseverance. Keep walking. Put one foot in front of the other. I left there and I called my sponsor and I cried and we prayed and we processed it. I went back the next month and we started to play together. I'm going to zoom this along. A few months into that process, I'm still going back every month. Another thing that I learned from service work in Narcotics Anonymous is how to show up on time. And that if I tell you that I'm going to be there at 6 o'clock, I damn well better have my ass there at about 5:50. Because if you're early, you're on time. If you're on time, you're late. And if you're late, you're fired. Right? Like, I believe in showing up on time. I'm not saying I always do, but I try to, and that's something that it's an area that I work on in my life. So I keep showing up, man. I keep sending these child support checks. I keep doing these things that I'm learning how to do. I want to emphasize that home group is where I'm learning these lessons. See, here's the deal about Narcotics Anonymous, man. If you don't know yet, what we do in here is we come into a meeting, and we get instructions, and we go out there and live. We come back and we report on what happened when we were out there living, and we get further instructions. We go live some more, we come back and report. We go live some more. That's what I did. And it's what I continue to do today. And what happened, man, was that a few months into that process, he said, the grandfather who was supervising the visitation said, hey, Brandon, why don't you guys just go on a walk, man? There's a little park right down the street. Y'all just go on a walk. I'm not going to follow you in the car or anything. Y'all just go have a good time. And I remember we're walking along, man, and this is one of my favorite memories. We're walking along, and she says, hey, Brandon, because I'm still not daddy yet. I want to say that, like, being called a daddy is an honorable title, and it has to be earned. You know, I'm not a daddy at birth. I'm a father. And in my case, I was a sperm donor, right? Like, for me to be called a daddy and have that honor of really feeling like I'm a daddy, I have to earn that. So she said, "Hey, Brandon." And I said, "Yeah, Levi." And she stopped, man, and I can still see it. She stopped and said, "I have your eyes." And what happened was that in that moment I knew she knows who I am. I didn't have to tell her, God told her, right? So we keep walking and we go down to this park and we go back home. And a few months into that process, he says, "Hey, Brandon, why don't you just take her down to McDonald's, man? You don't have to be back in an hour. Just go down there, play. Y'all get some ice cream, have a good time. Make sure you have her back by about 7 so we can get her bathed and get her in bed by 8. And we went down to McDonald's, man, and we played and we got ice cream all over our faces. And we took pictures, man, and I got kicked out of the ball pit because I'm too big to be in the ball pit. And we had a blast, right? And I remember getting back, man, and I took her back early because, again, I believe, like, I'm not gonna show up at 6:59 because you said be back by 7. That's old behavior for me. So we went back, I don't know, it's probably 6:30, something like that. We went back, and I said, "All right, I'll see you next month." And he said, "Do you want to give her a bath?" And I went upstairs, and it got to be the first time that, look, I'm sharing this stuff because this is what Narcotics Anonymous did, right? Like, I go up there, and it's the first time that I get to give my daughter a bath. And I remember I left, man, and I got back to my truck. And I called my sponsor. I said, "Man, he let me put her in the truck with me." And there was no police that, like, drove by McDonald's to make sure that we were there, right? He trusted me because he had seen the change in my life from the time that I was dating his daughter when I was in active addiction. I want to share that that little girl lives with me full-time today. I'm a full-time single father. She's been living with me for about 4 years now. I want to share that this ninth grade dropout stands before y'all as a college graduate with one degree and working on a second. I got my associate's degree. I got my associate's degree in May of 2009. I graduated summa cum laude with high honors, 3.81 GPA, member of an international honor society. I'm on a full scholarship now at a university working on a bachelor's degree. And I'm in like 5 honor societies. And I appreciate the applause, but that's really not the intent of what I'm sharing. I hope that the applause is for Narcotics Anonymous and for God. Because I'm not confused about the fact that the only reason that I'm clean today is because of God's grace and God's mercy. The only reason that any of these things are going on in my life is because I have found a loving higher power in Narcotics Anonymous that loves me so much and wants to intervene in my life, and all I need to do is get out of the way and let it. Like, God doesn't need my help, but he would appreciate my cooperation, right? Home groups, planting the seed. I want to touch on real quick on the joy that it is to see somebody walk in with their ass falling off and not know which way is up. And they look just like I did when I walked in. And they feel like, I don't know if this is going to work, but I don't know where else to go because I've tried everything, right? The joy that it is to see somebody come in like that, just like I did, and then watch them pick up a 30-day key tag. And then they get a sponsor, man, and like a year later, before you know it, they're at birthday night with a medallion, and they're talking about the joy that they're finding in Narcotics Anonymous. Because look, man, like, I don't know about anybody else, but I've been clean for 6 years. It's not a real long time, but it's not a real short time either, right? It doesn't always feel new to me today. You know, it doesn't always, I'm not like always invigorated and excited and passionate, man. I try to be, and that's where I like to be. But those newcomers that come behind and dive into this program head first are the ones that light my ass back on fire. And when we talk about planting the seed and giving that hope away like it was given to us, man, the most important thing that I believe that I can do is to just be honest. And I want to tell you, newcomer, I want to let you know that some stuff is going to happen. Somebody's probably going to die if you stay here long enough. You might lose a job. You might have utilities get cut off. You might get in a car accident. You might become permanently disabled. You might be diagnosed with an illness that's like incurable and lethal. I've seen people who've gone through all that stuff, and I've gone through a few of those things myself. And page 33, and it works how and why, in the third step. I'm on the third step right now. And one of the things it says is when such things happen to us, we hurt. And no amount of spiritual awareness will take away our pain. And what that means to me is like, I can't say enough prayers. I can't read enough literature. I can't go to enough meetings. I can't like call my sponsor and stay on the phone long enough that the pain is going to be removed from me. Because what I've become convinced of through this process is, you know what? Sometimes I just got to sit still with my feelings and be in that pain and try to walk through it with dignity. Right? But what it says right after that in that paragraph is that we find that we can grow in spite of our pain and perhaps in response to it. You know, I'm going to fast forward to the 11th step real quick and then I'll close. My favorite paragraph in all of our literature. It's the second from the last paragraph in the 11th step, page 112 of It Works How and Why. And it says, we've begun to see that God's will for us is the ability to live with dignity, to love ourselves and others, and to find great joy and beauty in our surroundings. And it goes on, and at the end of this paragraph, this is what gets me every time. It says, these priceless gifts are no longer beyond our reach. They are, in fact, the very essence of God's will for us. Guys, I didn't know on June 1st of 2005 that I was getting clean to do what I'm doing. I'm not here so I can speak. You know, I don't wake up every morning and go, I hope I get a call to fucking share somewhere today. I did for a few years in my recovery. Let me be honest, right? Y'all know I said the speaker's prayer right over here, right? Y'all know what that is? God, help me sound good. You know, but today it's not the most important thing in my life. It's an honor, and it's a treat, and it's a privilege. But the most important things that I do in my life are the things that I do when I leave Narcotics Anonymous and I go home to my daughter and when I go to class and when I go to work and the way that I treat my coworkers, the way that I treat the lady in the grocery line, man, when she's having a bad day. You know what? Look, we were in the Sarah and I were in the registration, the merchandise room, and we're getting merchandise. And these two ladies, man, were like at the cash only line and the computer was frozen up and it was just messing up. And like they had tears coming rolling down their face because they were so frustrated and stressed out. And like we gave them hugs and we were like, thank y'all for your service. It's going to be okay. And that's what Narcotics Anonymous is all about. For me, what it's been is it's been like, teach me how to grow up. Teach me how to stop being a scared little boy that I run on impulse. Raymond said it next door a minute ago. It's about the pause. Right? Like, it's about, like, I don't have to do everything that comes into my mind. I'm grateful to be clean today. Thanks for letting me share.